Hello friends, and welcome once again to a very special second edition of the Kings of Anglia podcast this week. My name is Mark Heath, with me as ever is Hutch.
Sorry, who?
Hutch.
Oh yeah, hello, Andy Warren.
Andy Hi. Warren, Hutch.
Hi.
Yeah.
Hello.
And also my good friend, the Doctor.
Yes, good morning.
Stuart Watson. I'm just going to use your nicknames from now on, see if I can wind you up.
You love nicknames.
I do
so
love
much.
Nicknames. People love nicknames, don't they? Apart from Hollywood Hurst, who doesn't have his nickname.
But anyway. You all like it. What's your nickname?
I haven't got a nickname. I don't really need one, do I? I'm just a host. I'm just here to ask you questions. And
we'll put that out to the listeners then.
No, don't give me a nickname.
You've given everyone else a nickname.
Yeah, exactly. But you can't be dishing them out willy-nilly. And
I'll just be the host. That'll do.
I think our listeners can come up with a good one for you.
Okay.
You don't get to pick your own nickname. That's how nicknames work.
Okay. So give me a nickname. Keep it clean. Not like Spanner or something like that. Anyway. So, we are back for a second podcast this week. Essentially because it seems to be quite well received. And we're interested to see if you take a second one. Essentially.
And there's been a game as well.
Well, yeah, but
that's
kind of incidental. There has been a game, Doctor. You and Hutch hit the road and you went to Exeter on Tuesday night. A small little jaunt. So before we get to the game, which is boring, let's talk about the important stuff, which is how was your journey? What did you have to eat? Where did you stop? Who's going to start?
I'll take how was your journey first. I'll take that section. It was a long way to Exeter.
And how long? We're talking hours?
What time did we leave? Left my house at 11:30 and we got to the ground at about 6:15. So it's quite long. We were flying and then the M4 reeled us in and spat us out. But yeah, I'll pass you on to Stuart Watson who will discuss the food.
So when did you stop? At what point? Halfway?
No.
We... Sedgemoor Services on the M5.
It's a new one for me.
Is it a good one?
Not too far from Exeter by that point. Had some Chinese slopped into a little plastic cup at the services, paper cup, which was all right. It's an okay diner. So that was the journey. And then, we left Exeter at about 11:30. And... returned to our beds at about 4 a.m. after whizzing back down the empty motorways.
And you didn't come in yesterday, which I thought was scandalous.
Mm.
I mean, what? You
had part-timers.
Exactly. You had a good 3 hours sleep before you could get back into the office. Poor form.
Sorry.
I was here on my own, writing back pages and stuff.
What time did you go to bed on?
About 12.
Cool story.
Good trip. You enjoyed it, by the sound of it.
Yeah. I think that. Yeah, we did.
Share with the listeners a little bit about because
I have got beef with Dennis Wise now, who Andy tells me was the man that pulled the ball out of the hat.
He's the one who
sent
you there.
Regionalised draw. My backside. Exeter away. Come on. Did no need that after a big build up to the season. Transfer deadline day. Rotherham on Saturday. Could have done without it, but there you go. We haven't got another game now, have we? So,
well, you've got a weekend off, Stu, so I don't know what you're moaning about. Hutch has got to be there.
Yeah.
Just share with the listeners. I was getting an update as I was going to bed, in fact, and indeed throughout the night from yourself, Mr. Warren, who was just sending me on the Ballers group, the WhatsApp group we all share, just updates as to which radio station you were listening to.
Smooth FM, which there is no greater soundtrack to a long drive home in the middle of the night than Barry White. Who else did we have on there, Stu? Spando Ballet.
Yeah, our driver, Barry Kent, who we mentioned quite a lot, he's very firmly into smooth radio as a radio of choice on the way home. Has it quite loud to keep him alert at the wheel.
Which is good.
It's
a good state to be in.
But yeah, lots of wet and Lionel Richie and Rod Stewart and Hot Chocolate. That was our soundtrack to the journey home.
What was your favourite tune that's played? I like a bit of Hot Chocolate.
Well, I was happy whenever Spando Ballet came on.
Yeah.
I think we probably had 4 or 5 Spando tracks, which got perked me up.
Who slept the most?
Nobody.
Nobody slept at all.
I probably had about 20 minutes. I think.
Yeah.
We probably didn't help that we both boshed a a whole packet of Frutellas each from a service station on the way
home. One pack each?
Yeah, one pack each. Reading. About 2 a.m.
So which was
highly unnecessary.
Where Barry fueled up for the princely sum of £1.49.9 per litre, which is as high as I can remember.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
I like this little picture of you two in the Scarlet Lady with those travel pillows you see on planes.
I've got some actually.
Just sort of hugging each other dribbling on each other's shoulders and sort of
I'll bring them next time.
Mumbling Hurst's name under your breath as you sleep, that sort of thing. So that's the journey. Let's talk about the game before we get to the angry outburst afterwards, which obviously is probably the most interesting thing that happened. Town are out of the cup again. No surprise. Well, it probably was this year because it looked like Hurst wanted to win that game. Unlike Big Mick. So, what happened? Where did it all go wrong?
First thing to say is I don't think either of us think it was quite... Our assessment of it wasn't anywhere near as damning as Mr. Hurst's assessment of the game. At times, Ipswich looked decent. They played Tyo Eden and Trevor Shalabar both knocked the ball around really nicely. They moved the ball well. The chances were at a premium again. But... they lost it with a goal that Hurst described as pathetic, conceding from a free kick, and then lost it on the lottery of penalties. But yeah, I don't think either of us thought it was as bad as Paul's assessment after the game, did we?
No, it wasn't great, but it wasn't to the levels of what Paul Hurst said afterwards, which was as damning as you can hear from a football manager. I can't remember the last time I've heard outbursts like that. Probably going way back to Paul Jewell talking about spineless, gutless pub team performance when they lost 4-0 at Burnley, and that really was a pathetic performance. I didn't put Tuesday night anywhere near that sort of level, nowhere near the sort of the Lincoln debacle levels. Second half wasn't great. They Exeter made subs, they got on top, and I just thought Ipswich lacked a little bit of leadership, a little bit of experience, a little bit of nous in that situation. But it's fine margins in terms of how people feel about this new era at the moment, and had they won the shootout, you know, maybe we would have still been looking at the positives of the last week or so. But as it is, people are just starting to get a bit twitchy.
Let's talk about it. And for me, there's two issues that arise from the game. One, you've got Hurst's straight fire after the game, which the video that he recorded with the club immediately after the game was considerably more angry than when he calmed down a bit and spoke to you, wasn't it? You said, Andy.
Yep.
I mean, we're assuming that people have seen said video, but in terms of a brief review, he basically said that the players weren't given 100%. If they had, they would have won the game. Essentially, that their effort was unacceptable. He's seen several things on the pitch that he never wants to see again, that sort of thing. And also, there was a few lines about making him change his opinion on what he needs recruitment-wise going forward. So it was really, really strong stuff from a manager. So A, is that a good thing? And then B, the second point arising from the game is we are now already 3 games into the season, Hurst not got a win, and already there are fans starting to panic. And you see on social media sort of saying things about how it's all going to explode. So Stuart or Andy, do you want to take the first point? Was that a good thing that Paul Hurst... was that outspoken after the game?
Again, I can see both sides of it, but he won't have said anything there that he hadn't said stronger to the players, and that's you know, that's imperative that happens.
How's it just quickly? How's it so after the game? I assume he goes back into the dressing room, does he?
He'll
gives them the hairdryer, and then comes out and sees the club, and then you. Is that the way it works?
Club always the club. The club do their filming first, and then they come over and see us. And as you've said, in that time, he clearly got some things off his chest. The first interview that he did was with the club. That got some things off his chest, and had calmed down a little by the time he spoke to us. So it was a little bit more measured in what he said to us. He's clearly hurt, isn't he? I can see both sides for how that it would be a good thing. It's great to see someone that cares so much, someone that he's taking it very personally, which can be a good thing, can be a bad thing if you get lost in that too much. But on the other hand, how many times can you do that before players stop listening, almost react the opposite to what you want them to do? Because he's obviously said some strong things in pre-season as well. It's not everything's not been as he's liked it the whole way along, and all of a sudden one bad display and he's kind of letting off. This was kind of the boiling point of a pre-season's worth of things he hasn't really liked. So it's an interesting one. I like the honesty, but you can see that certain individuals and certain characters wouldn't like hearing that level of honesty from their boss in a public domain.
For me, this is where he kind of truly set himself aside from Mick McCarthy, because had that been Mick McCarthy, he'd have been saying that Exeter are a really good team, they'll probably get promoted, all that sort of stuff, wouldn't he? Whereas Hurst, I mean, you very rarely saw Mick criticise his players at all.
Yeah,
always talked up the opposition.
That's the refreshing thing for me, because I think that was starting to wear really thin when there were times where people were seeing through the Mick McCarthy spin in terms of him trying to dress up performances as being good, when it was clear to the world and his wife that they clearly hadn't been good. But the question now is, has this gone too far the other way? And as Andy says, I think that level of criticism of players in a public domain, you can only do that so many times, and you have to pick your moments when you do that. And will it get the desired reaction? And this is the thing, Paul Hurst has come up through the levels, and I do think the higher you go up, player power becomes
absolutely
bigger, because of the more money that they're earning and all the rest of it. So I just hope that the players respond in the right way and don't go into their shells and think, you know, some of them think, well, who's this guy to come in here and start saying this, that and the other, you know. He's come from the lower levels. You know, we were discussing earlier, it's different if a Lampard or a Gerrard comes in and does that, because they have a certain amount of gravitas from what they've done, either as a player or, certainly in Mick McCarthy's case, as a manager, whereas Paul is still feeling his way into this job, and this is a really bold approach for him to be saying the things that he's saying. But you know, I really hope that it has the desired effect, and you know, I think we all agreed that that's what was needed. We talked about comfort zones and shaking people up a little bit, and he's certainly doing that.
The thing that worried him the most, I think, the way I read it and the way I read his reaction, is obviously he didn't like what he saw on the pitch. But one of his comments was that he was asking these questions of these players. He'd said, why did you do that? And I'm sure he wouldn't have been barking, like, why did you do that? Why? He asked them and got absolutely nothing back from the players, he said. And that's the reaction that he wouldn't have liked. And that, I think, that contributed to his demeanour when he came out and spoke to us afterwards. And you've got to remember that we are talking to these guys within minutes, particularly on this occasion, because they were dashing to get their flight. They flew back and they had a very limited time period.
Is there no space on the flight for you?
No.
Clearly not.
There'd have been no smooth radio on that flight, so I wouldn't have been up for it anyway. Yeah. But we're speaking to him so quickly, on this occasion, very quickly after the final whistle, and there should be, there's an emotion there, isn't there? But he clearly didn't like the reaction he got from his players, and I think that's the thing that worried him as much as the performance. That's the way I read it anyway.
Yeah, we've talked about this rewiring process, haven't we, with you know, playing a completely different way to the they have been before. Players have been used to a certain manager, a certain way of playing for 5-6 years in some cases, and I think Paul maybe doesn't feel like some of his messages are being taken on board. He's drumming into them how they want to play, and he's not seeing that. And I think we talked about it, certainly the wingers pressing higher and various other things like that, he's not seeing that happen at the moment. So,
and that was a strong team he put out as well, wasn't it? It was a team you'd expect to be able to go out and beat Exeter, no matter where
Exeter made more changes than Ipswich did. He was at pains to say that wasn't even an Exeter full strength Exeter team. So,
could there be any element of? I mean, clearly when Mick was here, he didn't give two flips about cup competitions. Is there any element of that kind of being a residual kind of? Well, the cups don't really matter.
There weren't many of them out there.
Yeah.
Of those players, who was on the pitch that played under Mick? Chambers, Knudsen, Ward.
Well, there's six new signings in that team, so that's six of the 10 outfield players were Paul Hurst signings. So it kind of lessens the "this isn't my team yet" argument, because it already is becoming a Paul Hurst team. So by calling out these players not buying into what you want, you know, you're almost sort of damning your own recruitment. But listen, it's going to take time for it's I understand why people are worried, and I understand, I keep talking about this little devil on the shoulder sort of whispering doubts into your mind that this could all go horribly wrong, and we all accepted that. But I think Andy and I are both in agreement that over the course of the pre-season and these first three games as a whole, we have seen enough there, enough positive, encouraging signs to I think, tell me that it could all fall into place quite nicely. And I think it might get worse before it gets better.
Yeah.
But I still, my gut instinct tells me that this will all come good eventually. Mm. But I hope it's sooner rather than later.
One of the people that obviously was notable because of who it is after that interview, Russell Osman on Twitter, tweeted, "Got to be careful in blaming everybody and everything else since joining the club. If it was all that bad before, why did you take the job on?" Any thoughts on that? I mean, Osman is particularly outspoken, isn't he, in terms of his criticism of...
Yeah.
He was very outspoken in criticising Mick McCarthy as well, wasn't he, Stewie, last season?
Yeah, we speak to Russell on a semi-regular basis, and he's always been quite forthright with his views, and I think that comes from a place of passion for the football club, as it does with a lot of the legends of that era. You know, I think a lot of them have bit their tongues in recent years in terms of saying what they wanted to say about style of football and the stagnation of the club, the likes of John Walk and George Burley and others. So I don't know. It's a difficult one, isn't it? I think you know, maybe that some of those players maybe felt that the likes of George Burley and others should have had a fairer look at the job over the summer. Maybe that's gone into the mix with those opinions. But I can see it, as Andy says, you can see both sides of the argument. It's a valid debate that is Paul Hurst's bluntness going too far? It's a bold tactic? Or is that what is just what's required at this moment in time? I guess the proof will be in the eating.
I think to suggest, obviously, that post-match interview was him being critical of his players, but I don't, you're certainly not at a stage with Paul Hurst where he's blaming everyone than himself for results so far. Results which have only had one loss inside 90 minutes, of course. But, you know, he would be the first... If it does all go horribly wrong, he'll be the first to admit his part in that. He's not... I don't think he's a man that's just going to go around blaming everybody else for what happens. He takes responsibility for this.
Yeah.
And he's made that very, very clear. And, you know, I think people like that about him. So I don't think it's quite fair to say that.
And he's
that,
very been talking about sort of inheriting before. He's been at pains to say that not everything was broken, and I'm not inheriting something that, you know, it's a team that finished 12th with injuries last year, and he's spoken of his respect for Mick McCarthy as a manager and a man, but he's just been very clear that I want to do things my own way, and you know, the buck will stop with me. I've got a very clear idea of what I think is needed and what will work, and I'm and I wouldn't, you know, his big buzz phrase is "don't be left with any regrets," basically. And he's basically saying if this all goes horribly wrong in the next 6, 12, however many months, at least he'd walk away thinking, I did it my way. Mm. And, you know, I tried to do what I think was right from the get-go. Mm.
Okay. Well, let's park that game there then. Obviously, you're saying there are reasons to be positive. In terms of looking at the upcoming games... maybe not so many reasons to be positive. You've got Villa at home this weekend. Stu will be on a country house retreat somewhere, Hutch, at that point.
I'm not sure if retreat is going to be the quite the word for what Stu's doing this
piss
weekend.
Up. Country house piss up. Then you've got Derby away, Tuesday night. Wednesday away, week on Saturday. And then the small matter of a team they've not beaten for how long? 9 years? 10 years? In Norwich City.
Nine years.
So, as it stands, you probably wouldn't make Town the favourites in any of those games.
No.
On current form.
Probably not, no.
So, how do we see the next kind of... because the other thing is, after that run of games, there's an international break, isn't there? So, if Town still are winless after that run of games, you've got 2 weeks to marinate.
Yeah. I think the scenario that you've just outlined probably went into the mix with Hurst's reaction on Tuesday night, because all of these little doubts and fears and worries, he would be feeling those himself personally. And I think he knows that he could have done with a an extra result or two on the board at this stage, given they've played two newly promoted sides and a League Two side in the Cup. So I'm sure a lot of his anger from Tuesday night stems from the fact that this hasn't put me on a particularly solid footing going into four tough games, and it is kind of now welcome to the Championship with these games coming up.
Yeah, this Villa game is the first massive test for all of this, I think.
Yeah.
Obviously, big test in all of these games in different ways, but first two Championship games against teams that Hurst knows well, that a lot of his players will have played against before, players they played against last season, then Exeter in the Cup, and now Villa. This, like Stu said, this is the first welcome to the Championship, big test. And sometimes things just fly when the pressure's really on, don't they? Sometimes we've seen that before. There were times where mixed teams played, the criticism was that you played well against the bigger sides in the bigger games, couldn't do it against, well, Rotherham was the one, and Burton and things like that. You never know. Some that might just be what, when the real lights are on, what these players need to make it click.
Hot take. Bomber Harrison is going to score his first goal for Town this weekend, and Town are going to beat Villa.
That's hot.
Thoughts?
I like the positivity. Yeah,
it could happen.
There's no reason. Honestly, for all the doom and gloom that can be cast, if you want to cast that doom and gloom, there's no reason at all they can't be Aston Villa this weekend. Like Stu said, I honestly think there have been more positives than negatives. I think that would have been an easier argument had they won the shootout and papered over a few cracks in that game. But there have been more positives than negatives, and something is building. They're working towards something, and there's no reason at all why it can't click against Villa. Obviously, it also might not.
Shall we take some questions, boys, as we look ahead?
Yes.
We're taking these as live, because I literally just put the thing out literally before we sat down to record. So I'll just take a selection here. First one, the sports mad guru. Are the new set of modern day impatient fans driven by internet at risk of being loud enough to disrupt Paul Hurst's efforts and derail the potential new atmosphere at Portman Road? I believe with time the new style and players will be a success, but worried the fans could cause self-destruct. And that, I mean, that is something that is a relatively new phenomenon in football, in that obviously there have always been fans who expect more and expect better, but now they've got a bigger platform than ever to make noise on social media all over the place. Is that something? I mean, in terms of the fans as a whole, I think most are reasonable, aren't they? There's not, obviously.
I think so. We've had this whole debate about mixed exit and the role the fans played in that, and I was quite defensive of Ipswich Town fans because I thought they had a bad rep of being unrealistic and thoughts of sort of divine right to success. I think Ipswich fans in general are a pretty reasonable, level, grounded bunch in terms of what they want. They just wanted a little bit more bang for their buck, ultimately. And I still think that's the case this season. You're right. In the world of social media, and it can have an effect because the players are very wired into social media, and I'm sure that does seep into their psyche a little bit in terms of feeling that that there's a bit of pressure on, especially when they're younger lads now that are all over the various social media channels. I'm sure they'll be tapped into what everybody's saying.
I don't think it will distract Paul Hurst, though.
No,
he's not a man that will be distracted by that kind of thing.
I can't imagine Hurst.
I tell you what, it will drive him even more because, as we know, his big motive is proving people wrong, and this might just bring out the best in him in some ways, because he loves being written off. That's what's kind of driven him at every club he's been at, pinning up the prediction tables on the wall at Shrewsbury, and I'm sure he'll be using that this week now more than ever. We've talked about the bookies making them favourites and various media outlets putting them amongst the relegation favourites, so the backs to the wall stuff is yeah, he'll probably quite like all of that.
Next one for you, Alfred Hutchcock. This is from William Taylor. Do you think Hurst will reconsider sending Dizel out on loan? He knows he's capable of moments and we appear to be missing them.
The more I've thought about this, the more I think he will send him out on loan. Teddy Bishop came on at Exeter on Tuesday, which was really nice to see, and he is a player that I think both Stu and I can see that Paul would really, really like Teddy Bishop if he can get him fit and get his body working 100%. And in that scenario, when you've got John Nolan, Teddy Bishop, and the possible return of Emir Hughes, I would be probably thinking along the same lines of Paul Hurst, actually. Andre Dizel, are you going to start him every week in the Championship initially now?
Mm.
Probably not. Would he be better served playing games in the Championship or a very top-end League One club rather than playing under-23s football? I think the loan is a better option for him there. Both him and Tristan Nydam need games. They've had a taste of the first team. They don't need to be playing at the training ground at 1 o'clock on a Monday lunchtime in front of nobody. Go and play games. Come back in January as the cliched new signings, and you're adding some honed class that's had 6 months of 5 months, whatever it is, of first team games, first team football, confidence, fitness. Add them back in January.
Okay.
For whatever kind of boost the season needs at that point.
I have to say, I thought Tao Eden was excellent on Tuesday night.
As well, yeah.
Faded big time towards the end, as some of these younger players did. I think we've both said that Shalabar has started all the games like a train. He absolutely bossed the midfield. He's been the one that's just been sitting in that withdrawn role just in front of the defence. Has a very clear role in terms of he's the one that drops almost into the defence to make it a back three, gets the ball, gets them playing. He's got a real confidence and aura about him, physically ready. You know, he's got a confidence about him, but 70 minutes onwards he's probably faded in all of the games. But both him and Eden look like they've got that little bit of Premier League loany class about them. And I know people have questioned, well, why are we bringing in young players on loan at the expense of developing our own players? I would say that from what we've seen of Shalabar and Eden, that they perhaps are just that little bit ahead of the likes of Downs and Nydam at the moment.
Mm.
And Dizel, by virtue of the fact that Dizel's been out for a year. So
he's played 9 games. I looked at this, I think it's 9 Championship games he's played. We're talking about Dizel as if he should be coming in, not just into the team to play every week. I think we're all guilty of this a little bit, including you, Mr. Heath, hand up.
Key player.
Expecting him to come into the side after a year out, having only played 9 games at the age of 19, and be a focal point for it. That's how we were perhaps talking. Maybe we got a bit carried away with what we saw at times. You know, is that a fair pressure to put on someone like that? Probably not. Could he benefit from going somewhere else, a confidence building 5 months where he could, you know, develop a bit more, see something new, come back a better player in January, a better player for Ipswich, of course. It's about development for him and the club. I can see that that's a scenario that would be good for everyone personally. There's no good having him sat on the bench, playing 15 minutes there, starting 1 week, then on the bench again for 2 weeks. Because the likes of Nolan, Eden, Bishop, hopefully, all need game time too. Go and get some minutes and come back a better player.
What's really happened is, of course, I've jinxed him, just like I did Drinan. So,
well, Drinan's coming back, and we know what's going to happen.
So I wouldn't bet on Bomber Harrison to score actually at the weekend with my current run of luck. Stewie and Adam Flatt says, have we missed a trick by not looking at Nick Blackman, one of Derby's legion of forwards who's gone out on loan to a Spanish second tier side,
Sporting Gijón.
He's one we mentioned, and Andy and I have been just chucking around some names. You know, when Waghorn was looking like he was going there, we scoured through their ridiculous array of striking options and wondered if there'd be a swap deal. I think Ipswich fans, and I'd include myself in this, are a little bit blinded on Nick Blackman in that he had probably one of his best ever games against Ipswich in that 5-1. I don't know how many he scored that night. He got a few goals and assists, but I remember him being their best player, and he absolutely destroyed Ipswich that night. Is that right? Am I right in saying that?
Was this the Friday night game?
That was when it all
was
went.
That was the 5-1 for Reading. He was at Reading then at that stage.
That's when Town had when Town had started really well, wasn't it? And the wheels came off.
I certainly remember him being very good against Ipswich at some stage. I need to check my facts on that one, but I think I'm right in saying that.
He's not really done it for Derby though, has he?
Exactly, and that's, I think when someone plays really well against you, they stick in your mind. It's the same as Wildschut, who went to Norwich, who had, I think he got that move almost based on his performance for Wigan against Ipswich, where he absolutely destroyed Ipswich. So I don't know, like you say, he's not done a huge amount for Derby since then. I know he's been up against it in terms of competition and all the rest of it, but yeah, he was one that we considered might be a loan option. I definitely think they need a wide option going forwards now, having looked at things. Ward and Sears, I just think there's frustrations on Hurst's behalf with both of those, that they're not quite the wide men that he wants. Edwards, we know, is a nailed on one. Hot take, I still think Jordan Graham might happen.
Caliente. Right then, this isn't so much a question as a statement, but I like it, from a guy who's called wonderfully Little Melon Man.
Look at his avatar.
His avatar is a young Sir Bobby Robson, so we like him.
Little Melon Man.
Little Melon Man. He says, please remind fans that management theory, Schwarzkopf, I don't know if that's Storming Norman, outlines a development process for high-performing teams. One, form, team is created. Two, storm, confrontation and clashing ideas. Three, norm, acceptable behaviours are set. Four, perform. He says, we're only at stage two. It's all good. Relax. I like that.
I struggled to take much of that in, I'll be honest.
For our tiny little minds.
So you start off, you create your team. Then inevitably there's confrontation and clashing of ideas, which is where we are. Storm.
Yep.
Then out of that becomes the norm, where the behaviours are set, that's acceptable to all parties.
Yep.
And then four is perform.
Yeah,
it's much like our sports desk.
Yeah, we went through that process with Mick, where he had to change a whole lot of behavioural processes in terms of, there's so much good that Mick's left behind in terms of this culture of politeness and respect and shaking hands and good characters about the place. He's got rid of a lot of bad eggs. He's left Paul with some fairly solid foundations to build on. But I think what Paul has come in and he's just tried to change, you know, he's brought in a few double training sessions. I think Tuesdays and Thursdays they do double sessions. He's refurbed the gym, he's doing a lot more work in that respect, and fitness is obviously an area that he feels that is not quite up to scratch, and sports science and things. So yeah, it's just an evolution of what's there before. But a bit of confrontation was definitely needed, I think, just to shake people up a little bit.
Harvey Davis, would Sam Gallagher be a good loan addition? Feel like we're missing a big presence up front and he could be the answer. He was at Birmingham last season and could replace Garner / Waghorn's physical game.
I like him a lot. Is he still available?
I've no idea. I'm just reading this thing out from Harvey. I assume he is. If Harvey says he'd be a good loan addition.
I thought he was very good. But are they going to go out and now get in somebody as a first choice striker? I'm not convinced, with Harrison and Jackson as you're vying for. I think they're your sort of plan A, plan B, or certainly they're going to mix those two up, whether you want someone as a more of a physical option, Harrison, or as more of a last shoulder option, Jackson, who I thought had a pretty decent full debut at Exeter. I think it's going to be more of a wide option.
Hot take. I think Paul Hurst will start with Caden Jackson in a wide position against Villa on Saturday, because like Stu said, I don't think he's overly enamoured with the wide options he's got beyond Gwion Edwards. Jordan Roberts didn't even make the bench on Tuesday, which was interesting. He was there though, wasn't he, warming up before the game? And those wide positions are so, so important to what Hurst is doing, pressing high, looking to turn the opposition, get in behind. If you're trying to get your fullbacks up high, you need your wide men to be doing what Hurst wants them to do. And I don't think the two wide men that played Tuesday night, Sears and Ward, did that. And with Edwards being a nailed-on starter, if he recovers from injury, he does have a quad issue. We'll find out later today about that. But I think he'll start Jackson wide on this occasion while he still searches for Jordan Graham.
Okay.
Who knows? Yep.
Golden Graham.
Or another. He's just the one that we've got a bit of a steer on at the moment. There's been a bit of interest in him bubbling away for a little while. So I'm sure there's plenty of other targets out there.
Flash Jordan.
I hope they don't sign Jordan.
Flair Jordan. Anyway.
They've already got Flair Jordan, haven't they? Jordan Roberts.
No, he's not. That's not really worked though, is it?
Two Jordans on the wings.
I know. It won't work. Rob Grove. Do you think, this touched a little bit on what you just alluded to, Andy, do you think the players still in the side from the old regime are capable of playing the faster, more pressing game that Hurst wants?
I think some of them are. I was talking about Freddie Sears there, who he still isn't a winger. Like, you got to be fair to him. He's now being asked to do a different wide role to the one that he's been asked to do, which he's not a natural for. He's been doing that for how many years? 2 years now he's been playing wide. He's doing it again. Like, I think this may be a bit unfair on him. Grant Ward needs to adapt a bit better to it. I think he isn't instinctive enough. He isn't high tempo enough and doesn't pressurise to win the ball back enough in those wide positions. Some of the others, I think Jonas Knudsen's taken to it quite well, I'll be honest. And then there's other players. Luke Chambers, he's done okay, but he needs to adapt in terms of working on the ball, using the ball. I think they can. Whether they, you know, they've only played 3 games of it competitively, so I think, you know, now's not the time to judge that. But I think they can. It's hard.
Okay.
Ward's definitely the one for me, because I think he's got the tools in his locker to fit into this Hurst system. He can get at people. Instinctiveness is the word Andy used. That's definitely it for me. I think the coaching staff are pulling their hair out that he's still got some bad habits there in terms of wanting to check back all the time and buy himself some more time on the ball.
They obviously think he can do it, though. Otherwise, they wouldn't be playing him. They wouldn't be persisting with him. They obviously think he can. It's just a question of getting it to happen instinctively.
Okay. Steve Parry, this isn't a question, really. It's more of a statement. Don't even think we've finished one yet. This is not Paul Hurst's ideal team. Some players are here because of lack of finances and needs another couple of windows to get his complete team. That's a sensible point.
Well, that's what they say. They say 3 windows is what a manager needs to put to make the team his. That's what Mourinho's always said, although he's had 3 and is still moaning about it. But
Mourinho, eh?
He's Jose Mourinho. We'll ignore him. But yeah, 3. You can't just come in and get everything exactly how you want it, and he's probably only been here 3/4 of a window as well, as and he didn't start till June the 18th.
Nick Wells, I know Nick Wells. I used to work with him at the Suffolk Free Press, former sports journalist himself, now a teacher. Good lad, Nick. Thanks for getting involved. Josh Emmanuel, he's young, hungry, and excelled in League One. He fits the Hurst player criteria. So why doesn't Paul Hurst seem to fancy him as a player?
Good question. We had this conversation on the way home. You've brought in Junoy Donassian from Accrington, who was a standout fullback in League 2 last season. When you had a standout fullback from League 1 last season already on your books, I could understand completely why they sent Josh Emmanuel out last year, because I thought he was very raw around the edges. He gave away a few penalties that were a little bit naive at times. His positional play needed some work, but physically he's got all the attributes. I thought he might come back into the mix, and I thought Paul Hurst might be the ideal manager for him to come back into the fold under. But as we always say with these things, these guys see them day in, day out on the training pitch. I see them a lot more than we do. He's obviously felt that he's not quite ready yet. And going back to the debate about loan players out, if he's not going to be playing week in, week out, maybe he needs to go out for another loan as well.
Okay, let's leave that there then. Let's wrap it up, boys, because I've got a lot of work to do. So this weekend, Stu's off on the road having a good time. Andy Hutch-Warren's going to be at the game.
Yep.
Big game, follow that with him online. Obviously, Stu, you're going to go and speak to Hollywood this morning and Big Trev.
Yep. This afternoon, yeah.
Get to talk to him for the first time. That's the first time we've spoken to him, isn't it, since he signed?
Yeah.
Good time to talk to him after he missed the penalty.
I'm sure we'll be delighted to be doing his press bow.
Have a chat about that. So that will all be online for you later on. As I say, always when we do this thing, please, if you do like what you're listening to, and I'm assuming you do, because it's good, leave us a review on iTunes. I should shout out, actually. We had a few. It's always good to shout the people out who've given us reviews. I'll just do that. And the other thing is to say that please subscribe on your podcast provider so you get this potentially twice a week, falling into your inbox, which you can listen to. Since
still
the last
no
ones,
sponsor.
Still no sponsor, Stu. Good point. Stu's still itching to get a tattoo of a sponsor. We've had reviews from The TiVo, Lulu, and Dino Latino since we last spoke. All 5-star reviews on iTunes.
Dino Latino.
Dino Latino, particularly impressed with your review of the OK Diner. Sponsor needed, OK Diner.
I don't want to be sponsored by the OK Diner. I think that could be bad for my health.
Yes.
Beggars cannot be choosers, my friend. If we can get any sort of sponsor, I'll take it. He says, since the Rotherham podcast, I now want to eat at the OK Diner. So there you go.
Well, maybe
we are giving the OK Diner a platform. We're pushing customers
their
way.
Sales of the Big Porker have spiked in recent days.
Just Dino, just mention where you've heard about the OK Diner when you go in.
Absolutely.
Just mention it.
Out some kind of discount card. I myself this weekend, it's my dog's birthday. So I'll be having a nice day out with Benson at Felixstowe on Saturday. Felixstowe Ferry, if anyone sees me, or more likely sees my dog, a brutish looking bulldog wandering along Felixstowe Ferry, do come and say hello.
Stand well back.
No.
He is vicious.
Soft as lice, that dog.
He is soft as peas. He's basically a clownish sort of tank who has no concept of how big and strong he is. But yeah, come and say hello, give him a little pet.
How old is he?
He's 4. He gets his annual Mr. Whippy ice cream on his birthday at Felixstowe every year. Looking forward to that.
Does he get a flake?
Chocolate's poisonous to dogs.
You also make him a cake, don't you?
I don't. My good lady wife makes him a cake, yeah. He's very spoiled, all right?
I like him.
Yeah. He's a good dog.
He's been in the office, hasn't he? He's come in for the odd Sunday shift.
Not allowed anymore.
Shadowy archant figures have suggested that.
Got told off about that. So he's not coming in anymore. But anyway, yeah. So if you do see me, come and say hello. Stewie, enjoy your stag weekend.
If you see Andy and I ever... Do not say hello. We're not into that.
Controversial.
I'm only joking.
That was nice. A couple of people shouted out to us because we were right next to the away fans at Exeter, weren't we? And
yeah, it was nice.
A few people said hello. It's always nice.
They shouted nice things, did they, as opposed to...
Wasn't like press box, like bus stop.
Yeah.
Although I would like that. Maybe that could become a thing, just shout press box at us.
Let's do that. Not at me.
No, but seriously, don't look Andy in the eye, though, because he doesn't like it.
He's mild-mannered, but he can snap. So, Stu, enjoy your stag weekend. You're back just
making
in time.
Making a big deal of this, my friend,
Have I mentioned it?
Have I mentioned it?
Are you once or twice. Are you coming back for the Derby game? You are, aren't you?
I'll be back. Don't you worry. I'm doing my hours, friend.
Good. Hutch, you'll be at the game.
I'll be at the game.
Enjoy that.
Thanks. Are you coming?
No, it's Benson's birthday. We've already established this.
Okay,
Andy, you're doing the verdict in my absence.
Oh,
please don't do like a Paul Hurst out sort of back page. I'll put my name on it. Yeah. and I'll come back to
Stu does the verdict, doesn't he?
Yeah.
We should talk about that. Actually, we've run out of time now, but we'll talk about that next time in terms of, again, going behind the scenes and how hard that verdict is to write on a weekly basis. Obviously, it depends what happens at the weekend, but I suspect it'll still be relevant next week. So yeah, I guess we should wrap it up now, boys. So any other business?
No other business, apart from to say that I achieved the dream of holding up a referee's substitutes board at Exeter.
He did. And
just quickly, we should tell people about this. Andy and I's new thing now is because we leave ground so late, obviously with the mammoth amount of workload that you put on us, we're generally the last people to leave the ground bar one steward who's sort of tapping at his watch with a big key ring. So we go off to find little spots to do our video. We did ours on the pitch at Exeter, and then we were trying to find our way through a labyrinth of corridors, and again we had a little nosy in the changing rooms, didn't we?
Oh yeah. We went in the referee's one. We'll get back to that in a minute. Some good stuff in there. We went to the Ipswich one again. Bit of a mess again. Orange peel everywhere.
There was no like blood splattered on the walls.
No.
Was there anything
like that? There was some weird brown liquid in a bottle. Don't know what it was.
It'd be protein drink.
Yeah, it didn't look very nice.
Yeah.
In the referee's room, there was just some empty bags of Haribo.
Important. Keep the energy up. Sugar.
Yeah. And the substitutes board.
Which I should point out... please do follow Andy Warren on Instagram. What's your tag on Instagram?
I don't know.
You don't know your own Instagram handle? Because
I think it might be Andy Walrus.
Is it? Is that a nickname?
Yeah.
Is that one of your nicknames?
That's my darts nickname.
Oh, of course it is, yeah. So
I think he is
on there, and there is a picture of Andy with said referee's board.
There is, but just be aware, it's kind of not a work Instagram, so if you're in it just for football, you will be inundated with pictures of my little girl.
There's far more to you than just football, my friend.
Yeah, there is, and if you want to find out what else happens in the rare minutes between thinking about football,
in the
get
Hutch
yourself
household.
On there.
He's a good follow, unlike Stuart Watson, obviously, who's updated once on Instagram. Poor form, Stu, poor form.
He was at a Game of Thrones.
It was a very strong first post. Let's not,
7 pictures in one.
Of Dawn.
It was good.
Yeah. So and hopefully
I've had a few tentative steps into the world of Instagram, and it's just confirmed my beliefs that it is all food pics.
Your old fashioned prejudices.
Well, they're not, yeah, because they're actually based in truth, aren't they? So
I'm interested to see what people eat. And indeed, what pets they have, Stu. So, I disagree with you there. But you're going to be one of these people that, like, the people who don't have TV because all they watch is Scandi Noir.
Not true.
On their Apple Mac.
Stu loves
Listen,
Netflix.
Different drinks for different needs. If that's what you're into, fine. It's just not for me. But yeah, Andy held up. We've digressed here. Andy held up the fourth official's board. We were looking for a toilet. We went into the door, and it was the referee's room, and there it was, the fourth official's board, and Andy lived out his lifelong dream.
And it was surprisingly large, wasn't it, Hutch?
Massive. Well, I'm quite a small little man, little melon man. yeah, it's quite big. It's not very heavy, but it's really
I'm looking
light.
At the picture now, and it's probably about half the size of you.
Yeah,
like,
it's really
you,
light.
That would cover
though,
your entire upper body.
Yeah.
It's huge.
I didn't dare turn it on, but...
Is it heavy?
No, really light. And it has little abrasive handle areas for grip in wet conditions.
Yeah.
So the challenge now, boys, next game you're both going to be together is Derby away. Where can you find...
you do well to do anything
in the Pride Park Stadium.
We'll have a little look
around.
We'll
see what we can do.
Super. In that case, we'll wrap it up. As I say, potentially the first of 2 podcasts a week, seeing how this one goes, so let us know. So we'll talk to you again very soon. I'm very interested in eating a big porker at some point.